You build a little wall here.
Yeah, he hates musicals.
Welcome to Geeks Without God with Nick Glover, Tim Wick, and Molly Glover.
We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
This week on Geeks Without God, we debut our new five questions. Are they embarrassing? Are they rhetorical? Listen, find out, and email us your answers after the episode.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God.
Hey guys, we're Geeks Without God.
We are Geeks Without God.
Hi, I'm also Geeks Without God.
I'm your host, Nick Glover. Joined, as always, by my co-hosts, Tim Wick.
I am Geeks Without God.
And Molly Glover.
No, I am Geeks Without God.
And just to remind you, I'm Nick Glover, and I'm Geeks Without God.
I don't know who to shoot.
Yeah, right. As we mentioned last week when we talked about Logan, we have five new questions.
Five new questions.
It's like the whole episode. This whole episode is five questions.
It's true.
And so if for some reason this is your first episode you're listening to of Geeks Without God and you have no idea what we're talking about.
Too bad.
We have this thing where we have five questions for our podcast at any given time. This is our third set of five questions. We answer them ourselves, and then we ask our listeners to write into us at 5questions@geekswithoutgod.com and send us their answers. And then at the end of an episode where we don't have a guest, we read your answers mm-hmm. and kind of talk about your results.
And if we have a guest, we ask them the five questions.
Exactly.
Yes.
And if we have a guest that's already answered that set of questions, then we get questions from them because we're lazy.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And because we care what our guests have to say.
And we're lazy.
And we're lazy.
And because our guests care what we have to say.
And they're lazy.
And this podcast is mostly about what we have to say.
Right.
What's the point of a podcast if it's not about what I have to say?
The five questions part is at the end. And at the very end of our podcast, it's like we hand over stuff to say to you.
Mm-hmm. To make sure they... Got a chance.
Yeah. And I read it verbatim and flawlessly pronounce your last name.
Well, so this episode, we're going to introduce to you, our audience, our new five questions by answering them ourselves.
Audience, five questions, five
and
questions,
then
audience.
After this episode, we encourage you to send in your answers to our new five questions, which we'll post online. And just a quick note, hey, if you're a Patreon supporter of ours at any level, if you send in your answers to our new five questions, you get bumped to the top of the list.
Yep.
Just not ahead of anyone else who's a Patreon supporter.
Maybe I'll rank them by money they send us.
No. First come, first serve.
This is a terrible games document. You have to know what's how to win a tie. All right.
It's the first one to send in their answers.
Alphabetical.
So.
FIFA, first in, first out.
That's right. So, Molly and Tim.
Yes.
Yes.
What conspiracy theory do you find most interesting?
So now, when we say interesting, we mean just whatever conspiracy theory
like,
fascinates
you. Like,
may you
live in interesting times.
It's not what conspiracy theory, for instance, do you buy into?
Sure, it could be. However you want to define it.
Okay.
If you find a legit theory about a conspiracy that you think is real, interesting... then that's your answer. And you can talk about why you think chemtrails are real, and we'll laugh at you.
Yeah, you totally could talk about that. We would totally laugh at you.
What, do you guys have a favorite, real or believed or not?
Or find most interesting.
Interesting. I'm thinking here. I think that one of the most interesting things that people actually believe wholeheartedly is that we didn't land on the moon.
See, I was going to pick that.
Were you?
That's a good one.
I'm sorry. I'm really sorry.
I'll pick a different one.
Right.
It's okay. I've got a second choice.
Okay. Because
yeah.
I think that is, not only do we have living human beings who have been to the moon and stuff, you know, from the moon that is the moon made, and we have video of being
moon.
On the moon and everything, and people still think
but
that we made it up.
Baked, Molly. Can't
that's what I think is so crazy.
It was all in a salt sage.
That's what's so crazy to me, that people, like, of all the things that they think that we would fake and that we would spend that money doing nothing for. And the number of people who work for NASA and who have been to the moon,
yeah,
who would all have to lie, never break, all this time, no one has ever broken, no one's ever confessed, it wasn't real. We've got all this new technology, we've actually put someone on Mars. There are people who don't think there's a robot on Mars, by the way. They
yeah.
don't think Curiosity rover is real. We've never even been to the moon, how did we go to Mars?
There's shit like they left a mirror on the moon and you can bounce a fucking laser off of it.
Yeah.
It's like, how the fuck did that mirror get there?
That mirror was already there. Yeah.
It's just super reflective regolith,
Tim.
Did
we just build a super-sized catapult and throw the fucker there?
I find that to be just, to me, that's the most interesting because there's a lot of conspiracy theories that make me sad. Because it makes me sad that people believe that, and I won't mention any in case they come up, but like, this is the one where I'm just more like, it doesn't make me sad, it makes me laugh.
I could watch over and over and over the video of Neil Armstrong decking that dude. Is it Neil
Buzz,
Armstrong?
Buzz Aldrin.
Buzz Aldrin punching the dude. Decking that dude. It's like that and the Richard Spencer getting punched video, just like back to back all day long in my brain.
Nick,
so you can punch Nazis or conspiracy theorists. That's
I'm not advocating for the punching of moon landing deniers.
If you're Buzz Aldrin, you can punch a moon landing denier.
Yeah.
You didn't go through 4 years of moon medical school to not punch a moon landing denier in the fucking face.
He's the only person that gets to do it.
Exactly.
If you go to the moon, you can punch a moon landing denier.
Exactly.
Everyone else, it's off limits.
You have to actually step foot on the moon, not just seen it from your spaceship.
You have to actually get out of the capsule.
Michael Collins doesn't get to fucking punch any moon landing deniers in the face.
For all you know, Michael, you weren't on the moon.
He can, Tim, he can, but it can't be with a closed face.
He has to slap him.
He gets to slap him.
Right.
By the way, for those of you listening, Michael Collins was piloting the capsule around the moon in Apollo 11.
For
those people who have no idea.
Just in case the other two couldn't get back up, they had to bring at least one guy back.
They had to bring one guy back.
We didn't know what was on the moon. Could have been monsters.
Well, my conspiracy theory that I find most fascinating or interesting now that we... eliminated the moon landing one. Excuse me. Is flat Earth?
I gotta back up. That was mine, but I gotta back up.
Believing that the Earth is flat because if you've been to a coast and you look out at the ocean, you can see the curvature of the Earth.
Yes.
It's
if you're in
really,
an airplane.
If you're in an airplane, you can see the curve. If you are on. If you're in fucking Kansas.
If you have a tall enough rod, you can measure the curvature of the Earth by shadows.
Yes.
I mean, the fact that the Earth is round is so bloody obvious that you have to actually work at it to believe the Earth
Some
is
Some willful
flat.
Stupidity,
You have to you have to ignore all of the facts to believe the Earth is flat. The fact is that, I mean, it's almost like we believe it because in school everybody gets taught for some stupid fucking reason that Christopher Columbus was trying to prove the Earth was round. Nobody thought the Earth was flat. I mean, there were some people who thought the Earth was flat, but you know, the accepted fact of the matter was that Earth was round. All Columbus was trying to prove was that it was smaller than most people thought.
Yeah, we got taught a lot of shitty things about Christopher Columbus that weren't true.
like, you know, he was a good guy. No, he fucking wasn't. So I just find flat Earth really messed up.
Nick, which conspiracy theory do you find most interesting?
So my backup answer my answer is really close to Tim's.
So my answer is a backup of Molly's.
Yeah. I know.
Is a backup because mine is mine. And now your answer is a backup because I took yours. All right.
What I want to say, this isn't my answer, but I want to say real quick. I almost said the 9/11 truthers.
Yeah.
Because anyone who says anything about it, I can immediately just go I don't have to pay attention to that person. But I don't find it interesting or intriguing. I just find it a little useful.
Yeah.
It's a quick test. Yeah. So most interesting is the Earth expansionists. There's this series of YouTube videos this guy thinks that if you look at a map of Pangaea, the overall spherical size of the Earth with all the land masses gathered is smaller than Earth is today.
Oh, boy.
And so he thinks that the Earth rotating and revolving is stretching out the Earth.
Because we have a hot core and heat expands?
Heat expands, but also the spinning and the moving.
Yeah.
Is like you'd spin a pizza dough to stretch
it's
it out.
It's like the glass blowers when they're blowing a big glass thing.
So he thinks that this, and a whole bunch of people have bought into this.
Oh, man.
Because this guy has like one or two YouTube videos that sound very persuasive, but it's just some, I mean, they don't, no one's like, oh, I'm sorry, you can't have a YouTube channel because you're full of bullshit. Anyone can get one.
Do we actually know what the spherical size of the Earth was when there was Pangea?
I mean, we know about the conservation of energy and matter, so kind of.
I mean, like, that's the thing, is like, where is he getting his data? Where is he like, oh, the I looked it up in
he's
the Pangean
at, he's
records.
He's looking at a drawing of Pangea,
yeah.
Which is, really, let's be fair, kind of speculation on what
right?
you look like.
Yeah.
He says things like, you know, a Pangean landmass was a higher percentage of the Earth's surface than all of the continental landmasses combined today. Well, so, like, clearly there's...
It sank. I mean, there's an ocean.
Yeah.
Like, so they're at the bottom of the ocean,
it's,
dude.
Or, you know, like, there's volcanic activity and magma coming up.
Yeah. They turn into other stuff in our atmosphere. Yeah. Like, that's...
So it's super...
Wow.
I like it because it's... It's interesting because it's mainly driven by this one guy on YouTube, and a whole bunch of people have picked it up. I think it's... only slightly smarter or more clever than flat earthers.
Yeah.
And so people who are like, no, that flat earth shit is bullshit, but you know what's legit though? Earth is getting bigger every year. Like that.
That's based on bad science, but at least it's based on science.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah. Kind of. I don't know. That's, I like that one a lot.
So all right. That's question one.
All right. So question number two. We'll start with Nick, because we started with Molly on the last one. What is your perfect two-week vacation? So we're saying money's no object, we're just wherever you want to go, but it's got to be a real place. It's got to be a real place.
You can't, like, go visit the USS Enterprise or some shit. See, this is tricky for me, because I don't super love traveling a lot. I mean, I don't have a lot of experience traveling.
Right.
Assuming we're going, but if money's no object, we're going first class.
I know, but all my childhood vacations were drivable. We weren't really vacationing family. So I don't have, like, the traveling bug that a lot of people do, so I haven't put a lot of time into this. I want to spend, like, it's cliche to say, like, I'd love to spend a week at Disney World, but... I mean, like, half my vacation could be a week at Disney World, and I wouldn't even sweat that. And then the other half, we'd, you know, go to, I don't know, what's the least shitty Disney park that isn't in America?
The least shitty, like, Disney World
park?
Yeah.
International.
I would go to Disneyland Paris because, number one, you could check out France, and that'd be pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
And Disneyland Paris is supposed to be pretty cool. If you're more into... I mean, all of the Disney parks outside of America are supposed to be pretty fucking awesome. So if you would rather go to Hong Kong or Tokyo, you've got those choices.
So there's the other option. Tokyo. I'd go visit my exchange student brother, Tomo. It's meet his family for the first time. He lives in the suburbs of Tokyo. And I would embarrass myself with how much Japanese I've forgotten since college part one and high school.
You would get stared at literally 24 hours a day.
I would. I would absolutely get stared at 24 hours a day. And there'd be a lot of comical situations about me fitting places. But I think here's how we'd do it. We'd do 1 week in Disneyland.
In California.
Yeah. And then we'd take off from California and do 1 week in Tokyo. And no, fuck it. The whole 2 weeks in Tokyo, we do 1 week at Disney there. And 1 week just in Tokyo, we hit like Akihabara.
All right.
And I
think it's a better idea because I don't think Disneyland can sustain 1 week.
No.
Oh, visits. There's Disneyland
and it's California Adventure. So there's the Magic Kingdom, there's California Adventure. Pat and I went there and we spent like 3 days there and felt like we had done it pretty well.
Okay.
And then you're just in Anaheim. So it's not like...
Yeah.
That's good. I like
that.
Tokyo.
Yeah, Tokyo, I guess.
Mm-hmm. All right. All right. So I have two answers because my perfect 2-week vacation, Molly alone, would be going somewhere where I am hiking for like 2 weeks, mm-hmm. like not necessarily camping or anything, but like going somewhere where I could do things like I would love to go to Egypt. I want to hike through all the pyramids. I want to go visit all I want to go to Greece and like hike around like crazy and like hike up mountains and stuff like that. Like it'd be a very active outdoors doing stuff all the time vacation. Yeah. But like, I also know that is not Nick's perfect 2-week vacation.
Hell no.
And my perfect 2-week vacation won't be perfect if I don't have Nick there.
Aww.
I'm sorry. It just
won't be at mine too.
I know, of course. Yeah. I'm just saying it wouldn't. So that's something I want to consider when I think about mm-hmm. it. And honestly, we've been talking about it. I really think I want to spend 2 weeks at the Disney World Universal Studios thing and be able to go to Wizarding World of Harry Potter and all the Disney parks and take our time and not do 4 parks in one day. And
go to SeaWorld?
And go, maybe, I'm not, SeaWorld, I'm not really into watching fish to get tortured for money. I don't know. It just seems weird. It's an aquarium. I don't know. It's all right. I've seen fish.
I just don't. I've been to aquariums.
But I want to go to Disney World in a way where I can, if money's no object, especially because it's very expensive there.
That's true.
And then I want to be able to just be like, what do you want? Buy it. What are we eating? Buy it. I don't care. Where are we going? The nicest restaurant in this, you know, that you can find here, and like really take the time to do all that and, you know, spend the money to get to do the meeting Cinderella and spend the money to have mm-hmm. the romantic stuff and then go to Wizarding World and spend all the money to do all the stuff there and get my wand and, you know, all the cool things. And you know, spend the money on the professional pictures that people get and all of that. And I've traveled abroad. I like going abroad, but that wouldn't be perfect for me because perfect for me is just like, it's so fun and it scratches all my itches. And it's this thing that I've been wanting to do for a long time.
Sure.
And even though I've been to Disney World a couple times, I've never been there as an adult and stayed the night one of the gorgeous hotels and, you know, get to enjoy all the cool stuff there and watch toddlers get eaten by alligators and just all the stuff you like to do.
A walking vacation I would consider with you is going to Scotland and walking
like
the Roman Wall. Yeah.
Yeah.
I do that.
All right. Well, I'm going to take you up on that.
I do that.
I'm going to take you up on that. That sounds great. Tim.
It's a very difficult answer, but I'm going to go with someplace that I haven't been that I know I could spend 2 weeks.
That's
going to
be tough,
weeks.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say the Galapagos.
I
have not been to the Galapagos Islands, and I think I could easily spend 2 weeks on one of those cruises that takes you all to mm-hmm. all the different islands, and you get to see all the wildlife, and that would be pretty neat. I mean, there are a lot of places that I've been. I mean, I could spend 2 weeks at Yellowstone or at mm-hmm. Yosemite easily and not even feel like and be upset that I was leaving at the end.
Yeah, yeah.
But
for
the answer to this question, to me, it's like think of a place that I haven't been that I really want to invest the time. And I think the Galapagos would be my answer. So
I like that. I like that a lot.
So that's my
Bring
answer.
Bring us back some finches.
All right, guys. Ready for question 3?
I am
so ready.
We're gonna start with Tim.
Yeah.
Question
3.
What's a movie that changed your life?
Okay, it's a movie we've talked about, and it's not necessarily. I have problems with this movie, but especially in relation to this podcast, I think it made a huge change in my life, and that was Religulous. You know, it's not. Again, I don't think it's the best movie about atheism. I have real problems with the way Bill Maher presents some of his...
Real problems with Bill Maher.
Yeah.
But there was that moment at the end where he basically says, if you don't believe in God, it's about time you stand up and say it.
Yeah. Yep. Agreed.
And that made it...
That
made
was
a
our
huge,
call to action.
Yeah, that made a huge, huge difference to me because I don't even know how recently I'd kind of been like, you know, I think really I don't buy any
mm-hmm.
of this shit.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't something that I was loud and proud about.
Yeah.
And watching that movie made me go, you know what? I'm an atheist. I'm not ashamed of it. I'm just going to be out about it.
Which is funny because we had already started our podcast when we watched that movie for the show. And so it's interesting that like we already had this Atheist Geek podcast for a little while and we still didn't feel like we were being out and loud and you know
well, I had
crazy
seen it
about
before
it.
The podcast
oh you'd
so
seen it before
I had seen
I
it
I see
yeah.
we hadn't seen it before so
anyway that's why that made a difference
I like
to me.
That yeah. yeah Nick, what's a movie that changed your life?
Bottle Rocket.
Oh.
Wes Anderson's first movie.
Mm-hmm.
I watched it in high school after reading an interview with, was it Martin Scorsese? No, it was, Taxi Driver, Martin Scorsese. Yeah.
Yeah, Martin Scorsese.
Yeah, it was Martin Scorsese. Because I was writing a big report on Taxi Driver, which was and is my favorite movie of all time, probably. And in this article, Scorsese just watched Bottle Rocket, and he was talking up this mm-hmm. young director that he liked,
mm-hmm.
and talking about the movie, and I watched it, and something about the movie made me want to make stuff and be more creative, and make movies for a while, but I don't know, I feel like that was my... Either that or, like, Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas was my intro to... And it would have been kind of around the same time, you know, for me as a younger teenager or teenager. Something about it, it was, like, the first kind of independent movie that hit me in a way where I was like, there's more to movies than, like, big blockbuster movies or critically acclaimed movies.
Mm-hmm.
There's also... cuter, smaller films, which I don't know, the plot doesn't really go anywhere, and it's kind of masturbatory, and it's just a bunch of fuck up guys kind of dicking around and, you know, joking about robbing a place, kind of, but
mm-hmm.
something about it just really struck a chord with me, and I think influenced my taste in movies, like my taste in movies before that, and my taste in movies after that is forever permanently changed.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I could probably say that about Taxi Driver, too, but I don't know. I feel like that one changed how I watch movies, at least, forever.
Yeah,
What about you, Molly?
So, okay, like, first I'm going to give a super cheesy answer, because it's The Rocketeer. Because
that's
the movie that was playing at CinemaRex when Nick and I, like, kind of admitted that we
started
our courtship. And if I hadn't gone to see it, which I almost didn't, I almost didn't tag along with everyone. If I hadn't tagged along, I don't know that we would have ever gotten together, to be honest. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what happened. But for like
And that's a fair interpretation of the question.
Yeah. But just to give another answer, I think one of the first movies that, because I saw it when I was in college, was Fight Club. Mm-hmm. And that movie changed my life in the sense that, like, I realized that while it wasn't an ethos that I necessarily believed in, like punk anarchist kind of, you know, like stuff, the authenticity of the movie really struck a chord with me. And realizing that was one of the first times, and actually defending that movie, because I loved it so much, defending that movie in my college classes to a room full of women that were telling me why it was, you know, the most misogynist thing that ever existed and a terrible thing, was something that really taught me some authenticity, and like I kind of learned how to be myself and not and speak up about stuff I liked, and I did a feminist Marxist deconstruction paper of it and some other things. Like I really, like, I feel like I learned how to think critically in a big way because I saw that movie at a time when I was like, I think I was fucking 20 years old
mm-hmm.
when that movie came out, you know, and so it just I used to say it was my favorite movie. I wouldn't say that anymore. I don't know what my favorite movie is anymore, but it really just, I thought it mattered a lot to me because it was and this is going to sound weird because you don't usually hear people say hadn't seen a male perspective before in a movie, but that particular idea of masculinity and what it means to be a man and what it means to be a person, but also like what you owe people and a found chosen family and just some things like that. I don't know. I really liked it. But I don't know. Movies don't change my life. I like movies a lot, but I like them. Books are what does it for me, to be fair.
Sure.
So, but I think that that's what I would go with.
Hmm. By the way, I just do have to throw out there that the movie where Pat and I hooked up the second time, to be clear, it was DOA with Dennis Quaid and... so,
that explains a lot.
Yeah. Anyway.
That's great.
Dennis Quaid and Meg Ryan. So anyway.
I feel like this question's fairly straightforward. We've had questions about movies in the past For our sets of questions.
Sure.
You know?
But so, yeah, this is more about a movie that influenced you, that made a change in your life. Not necessarily...
However you want
not
to interpret it.
Yeah, not necessarily like...
A favorite or best. Yeah, but,
you know, like...
It could be like I was in Colorado for Dark Knight Returns. I mean, who knows?
Like, Tim's actually changed the way he behaved in his life. Nick's movie changed the way he saw movies and art. Right. And mine changed the way that I thought about some stuff. Yeah. You know, there's all kinds of ways to interpret it.
Yeah, absolutely.
So our fourth question is, what's the geekiest thing you've ever done or said? So we've talked in the past about, like, the geekiest thing you own and how ownership of an object can, like, kind of define you as a geek. But now we're talking about, like, how your actions have defined you as a geek.
Yeah, I would say, like, kind of like a single event, too. Like, something where you're like, this was... I know it's me to answer again.
Well,
the problem is I got to narrow it down to one.
Yeah, I know.
I've done a lot
of... Tim. It's not Founding Convergence, because it should be Founding Convergence.
Yeah, probably.
Your geekiest thing you've ever done is... Convergence is how many other people's geekiest thing they've ever done.
It's true. Think about that.
I feel like that's...
You don't get to pick my geekiest thing.
I do.
But believe me, it's...
Who's asking the question?
It's on the top 10. It's on the top 10.
Okay, sorry.
I say so many, like, dorky and geeky things. I don't know. But, like, I feel like probably the geekiest thing I've ever done is when I had to write a paper for, like, kind of like a thesis for your English major, right? Mm-hmm. In my school. I wrote it about the Sandman graphic novels. And it was a 35-page paper that I wrote out, and then I gave it to Neil Gaiman and told him I would love to know what he thought of it, and especially if he had any, like, edits or corrections. and he was very nice and, like, took this big thing of paper that I handed him and was like, that's very wonderful. And to his credit, flipped through it a little bit and was like, oh, there's lovely pictures and you've done quite well here. And very well done. Very well done. What did you, what grade did you get? I was like, oh, I got an A. Well, of course you did. Very, very good. Very, very nice. Very nice. Now, who am I making this book out to?
He's such a charmer.
So probably the geekiest thing I ever did was not just write that paper, but then hand deliver physical copy to the author and ask him for his feedback.
So, that's pretty amazingly geeky. I am impressed.
What, one year, one of my roommates that worked at Dreamhaven Books, the comic shop, when that was more uptownish, I was helping out one day when Neil Gaiman was doing a signing, keeping an eye on the store while he was doing his reading.
Is this your geekiest thing, or is this
anecdote?
No, it was just an anecdote.
All right. And he was signing these big posters, but his fancy pens weren't drying very quickly. So my volunteer job became stand next to Neil Gaiman while he shakes hands and signs things and wave these posters in the air and dry them so that they can be rolled up in a tube and sent packing. And so this guy, who eventually later was a coworker of mine, but at this point was a total stranger, did the same thing. It was original writing.
Oh, it was fiction.
It was fiction that he had written. He gave Neil Gaiman some fiction that he'd written and said, like, my email address is on there. I'd love any feedback if you have the time. Also, I realize your time is precious. So, he was as polite as you can be about it. But then, like, years later, when we ended up being coworkers, I was having a hard time remembering where I knew him from. And at his going away party, I figured it out when he quit the job. And I was like, didn't you came in? And he turned beet red and was so embarrassed. He was like, I can't believe someone there for that moment and that you remember. And
like,
that was...
My paper had, like, at the top, like, because I was going by Kat in college. So Kat McBride, you know, English, like, 460 whatever, like, paper, like, all this stuff, like up in the corner and just the whole thing. Very geeky.
What's yours, Tim?
It is hard. It's hard not to pick founding a science fiction convention. It really is. But this is, to me, a more interesting story of a geeky thing that I did. There was a year everybody knows Pat and I are pretty big Disney nerds.
Yeah.
And we go to Disney World a lot. And there was a year where we were doing this big renovation to our house, and like our entire first floor was gutted.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
And so one of the things that we decided to do that year, we got annual passes to Disney and took like 4 weekend trips to Disney during the year just to get the fuck out of the house.
Yeah, right.
So we'd gone to Disney a lot, and so what we decided was we needed to do a Disney World Iron Man Day. And what we determined a Disney World Iron Man Day was, you had to go to all 4 theme parks in the same day. You had to open the park that opened the earliest. You had to be there at opening.
Okay.
And yep. The park that closed the latest, you had to be there.
We weren't there at closing. We were close. We were there for the final fireworks.
You had to be there at closing. Yep. You had to ride.
Was it Downtown Disney then? Because that technically closes latest.
Downtown Disney didn't count. That right. was right. 4 major theme parks. You had to ride at least one of the major rides in every park.
Oh, we didn't do that.
You had to go on like Everest if you were in Animal Kingdom.
Sure.
You had to go on like Tower of Terror, the Rock and Roller Coaster when you were in Hollywood
Great
Studios.
Movie ride? Would
nope,
that count?
That's not a major ride.
What?
It's an awesome ride, but it's
what?
Not.
What? That is like one of their biggest attractions.
It's not. It had to be a ride that had a big queue.
Oh, I don't know.
You had to eat a sit-down meal at a restaurant.
Did that.
You had to see at least one fireworks show. And
did that.
At least one parade.
We did that. Oh, we were close.
We saw 2 parades.
If we had ridden more rides, which we didn't, because honestly, it was raining and it didn't. It wasn't raining.
We were in the edge of a hurricane.
Yeah, it was hurricaning, and so
that should make it easier.
Yeah,
you'd think it'd be emptier,
but instead things were shut down.
And people were just crabby and wet.
Yeah.
So anyway,
we
sat down and figured out the rules, and we spent one day where we very carefully followed the Disney Iron Man rules.
And now you can say Disney Iron Man, and people will get confused because they were both owned.
It's true. So that was our nerdy Disney.
I like
thing.
It.
And next time, if you do it, you have to be wearing an Iron Man mask.
By the way, I do have to say.
You buy at the park.
From a nerdy, geeky perspective, I just have to point out that this is going to happen later this year because due to some scheduling, Pat and I actually got annual passes for Disney this year,
mm-hmm.
and I turned 50 this fall.
Ah.
And I was like, what am I going to do for my 50th birthday? So I decided, all right, fuck it. And when I'm going to turn 50. I've got these annual passes anyway. Let's go to Disney World. So what's going to happen, because my birthday falls on a Monday and it falls right in the middle of Renaissance Festival.
Yes, it does.
I'm going to work a weekend at Renaissance Festival. On my birthday, we're going to fly down to Florida. We are going to stay at Disney World until Friday, at which point I will fly home and work at the Renaissance Festival
Amazing.
The next weekend.
That's awesome.
Insane.
So, that's a good thing for your 50th.
But that is
like
not the geekiest thing I've ever done because I haven't done it yet.
True, and it's not that geeky. The Iron Man thing sounds way geekier.
Yeah, that's
when you put rules on your
geeky is rules.
All right, Nick, what's the geekiest thing you've ever done or said?
Mine's geeky in a little bit different way than your guys' stuff is geeky. So, So my geekiest thing, I might have talked about this story before in the past, but this is one of the things I'm considering to be like a birth of a geek moment for me.
Oh, all right.
When I was, I want to say like 4th or 5th grade, I brought my copy of Lord of the Rings that I was reading for the first time to school.
Mm-hmm.
And when we all got free time to, you know, play board games or, you know, checkers, whatever the fuck, and run around, do whatever, you know, it is that elementary school kids do with their free time, I chose to find a quiet spot in the room and sit and read the book that I was super enthralled with.
That's what I did too. That sounds good.
Right. I got picked on and made fun of for it. And it was like, why are you reading? Like, why would you do that?
Who's making you read that?
Well, what you reading for?
Yeah.
That sort of a, you know, Bill Hicks
is that
thing.
A book?
Yeah. And I feel like that was the first time where I ever felt put out of a group, not because of what I looked like or anything like that, that I didn't have control over. This was the first time when it was like, oh, that thing you like isn't cool, so you're not cool. And my response was kind of like, well, fuck being cool then. I like this thing, and it's great.
Yeah.
And that's when I like made the choice to kind of double down and accept being a geek and not
like
really
that.
Give a fuck about what anyone else thought. So I think the most the geekiest thing I've ever done is probably like that, I don't know, birth of a geek moment
choosing
for me.
Choosing books over popularity. Yeah.
Choosing books over not getting over fun of for yeah. me to book. I yeah. wasn't popular.
But choosing then, books but, yeah. over acceptance.
For sure.
Yeah. Yeah. yeah
That was geeky. And it kind of led to who I am today to some extent.
All right, Tim.
Awesome.
We're on our last question.
Last question.
Oh, shit, y'all.
And I think, Nick, you get first shot. All
right.
This one. It's a good thing it's not me. Nick, what's your favorite hangover cure?
My answer comes with a short story, as no one will be surprised to know. The first time I ever blacked out was a New Year's Eve party at the punk house I was living in the Seward neighborhood of Minneapolis. I didn't know that I had blacked out the next morning when I was up and walking around with my roommates and landlord. They're like, hey, let's go get breakfast at the Seward Co-op. Sure, let's do it. Or Seward Cafe. Let's do it. I order a spicy red-green breakfast. It's like broccoli and eggs and
red peppers. Yeah, yeah.
And it's all mixed up spicy egg and vegetable jumble, right? And I ordered that, and I'm like, oh, extra spicy. And my landlord's like, really? You sure that's a good idea? You had kind of a rough night. I'm like, ah, no, fuck this. I love spicy food. I get it. I just dump hot sauce over the whole thing. And I'm just like happily munching away, eating all super happy. And my roommate and his buddy and my landlord are just staring at me like you should slow down, man. You had kind of a rough night. You don't remember like throwing up and stuff? I'm like, no, what are you talking about? And
all I remember is sweet dark blackness.
I remember as being a like happy dancing guy in the hallway.
And then
yeah.
I woke up here.
And then I woke up
at the
right.
restaurant.
Uh-huh. And so that's when they filled me in that I had blacked out, and they were so surprised that I was so ready to eat something kind of volatile. So my hangover cure is spicy, greasy food. Preferably greasy. It doesn't have to be, but spicy food, I feel like you can, it's absolute non-medical bullshit.
Yeah.
But I feel like you can burn, you got a cold? Oh, you got to burn that out with something hot.
Yeah.
You got the flu? You should burn that out with something hot.
Yep.
Like, oh, you got stomach pains? You know what you should do? Eat some chili and show your innards who's boss. Punish them with spicy food until they comply.
None of this has been approved by a doctor.
Yeah, and it's absolute garbage, but my favorite cure for a hangover is spicy food, preferably something greasy.
All right.
I think I should go next because my answer is going to be boring.
What's your, how do you cure a hangover?
I don't drink. So I've never been hungover.
Pat ever been hungover?
No, because, I mean, Pat will drink, but she'll drink like one drink. Neither one of us get drunk. I mean, I can count on, I got drunk once in college that I can remember. I didn't get blackout drunk. I just got drunk. It was one of those, I'm in college, I'll give this a shot.
Sure.
If you want to get high, I know a guy.
Yeah, I'm sure.
I just want to check it out.
So what's your favorite thing to do to hungover people, to torture them then?
Oh, Jesus.
Like what do you, like if someone is hungover and you feel like being a dick.
But I'm never around hungover people.
I've been to a MegaCon, so yeah.
Hang on.
Beat them at a game, I guess?
Yeah. Just this last season at Cast Call for Renaissance Festival, Tim, Molly Zupon showed up to Cast Call after a really rough drunk night. And I seem to remember you having
I seem
to remember you trying to cure her hangover with a cowbell?
No, what I did with Molly is I just made fun of her for the entire day.
So
I was just like, hey, everybody, Molly's hungover.
Did it cure her hangover?
It didn't. It's hard to tell because it ruined her day.
So maybe that's your favorite hangover cure.
I just gave her shit because I'm like, really? You went out and got drunk before a day at the Renaissance Festival? You deserve all the abuse I can give you.
Tim's favorite hangover cure is preventative.
Mm-hmm.
It's something he takes before drinking, and that's not alcohol.
Technically, so are both of mine.
Oh,
all right.
Yes.
What are yours?
My favorite hangover cure is cocaine.
Good Lord.
Sorry. But for real, that's the only thing that's ever worked so perfectly that it's like, don't even care anymore. But
and we're talking about like years ago. We're not talking about like...
I don't really get hungover anymore because I don't drink past... If I drink so much that I'm going to be hungover, I puke first. I have a hair trigger for puking. So like I drank way too much at Andrea and Justin's wedding.
Yeah, in Vegas.
The night of their wedding, after the wedding was done and all the officiant duties were over, I drank way too much.
The rappel Capellas, both friends of the show.
Yes. I drank way too much, and I was very spin, awful drunk, and I threw up a whole bunch. And when I woke up, I didn't feel great. But I wouldn't really say hungover necessarily. It's just like, I threw up a lot last night.
You can tell you'd been drinking.
Yeah. But so the one I used to drink a whole lot was when I was also doing drugs. And so cocaine is the thing that fixed it the best. I knew that was a tongue-in-cheek answer. My real answer for now, the grown-up Molly who doesn't do cocaine all the time, is potatoes.
Potatoes.
Doesn't matter.
Soak it up.
Doesn't matter what kind.
Like raw?
Potatoes. No, not raw. Mashed potatoes, french fries, hash browns, breakfast potatoes. Potatoes. I got to get potatoes in me and I will feel better because it is a food that has always been my comfort food when I didn't feel good as a kid. Like it's something that settles my stomach really well. Just always has. You can do anything to them. Boil them, mash them, stick them in a stew. It's true. They are a staple in all sorts of different flavors of cuisine, so you can get them all kinds of ways.
Newsflash, Irish girl cures drinking with potatoes.
I know. But so those are my two answers. Like, but I would like to do one runner-up answer. My favorite hangover cure I've never tried, that I don't know if it works, the one that I see people do that I think is fucking hilarious, is a glass of tomato juice with a raw egg dumped in it that people drink. That is, a raw egg is a known hangover cure. Like, either just a raw egg in a glass and you just drink it, or raw egg and tomato juice is something people do all the time. It's super awful.
Is it the protein they say, or what?
I have no idea. It seems very witchy and superstitious to me.
Of course.
It's So
you need the literal hair of the dog.
Most hangover cures are.
Yep. Boy. Well,
so those are our five questions.
New five questions, so we should recap.
Yeah. So, which conspiracy theory do you find most interesting?
Mm-hmm.
What's your perfect 2-week vacation? What's a movie that changed your life? What's the geekiest thing you've ever done
or said?
And what's your favorite hangover cure? And of course, you know, there's some flexibility with how you interpret these answers.
Favorite, or interesting, or
exactly.
Great geekiest.
They're deliberately that way. If you want to answer our five questions, you should respond to this recording immediately with an email to 5questions@geekswithoutgod.com.
5 questions.
5 questions.
And send us your answers, because we'll read them on the air. Mm-hmm. And on the air, on the internet, let's be real.
Whatever.
And if you're a Patreon supporter, first of all, thank you.
Yes.
Yeah, thank you.
Second of all, you get bumped to the front of the list, but not in front of anyone else at the Patreon donor.
Skip the muggles.
Skip the muggles, as Molly says. Jesus, Molly.
It's part of her perfect vacation.
Call them mudbloods.
You can jump to the head of the queue to some degree if you're a Patreon supporter. Just mention that in your answers. We'll put it together. We're clever.
Yeah.
And we'll read those even sooner.
Mm-hmm.
You guys have anything you want to add?
I'm really excited, you guys. We've been doing this show for a long time, and it always warms our hearts to see how many people want to answer our questions.
Yeah.
This is just some fun stuff that we like to know about people.
And the exciting thing, and we did not plan this. We literally did not plan this. This is episode 249, which means our new five questions.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Whoever sends in their five questions, like, theoretically, episode 250.
Or at least we will start our new five questions with episode 250, whether we have a guest or not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
That's a fun little landmark.
And you know what? I will say, if you've listened to the show before, you've heard me read people's five answers and stuff, and I love when you give us a little bit of those opening paragraphs telling us about you and why you like the show, where you listen. That's great. You don't have to, but never feel... A lot of times people will apologize, like, oh, I'm sorry for rambling on about myself. That's why we want you to write to us. We want to know about you.
Because we spend lots of time rambling on about ourselves.
If anyone needs to apologize for this podcast, it's us.
Well, Molly. But yeah. and with that bit of spousal blaming.
And if our podcast is your hangover cure, you go straight to the top of the queue
That's a rough answer.
I don't know how my voice is helping.
You only drink once a week? You only drink to excess once a week. So, we've been Geeks Without God. Of course, you can find us on the iTunes, Stitcher. We're looking at Google Play right now. We'll figure that out soon, hopefully. Otherwise, geekswithoutgod.com. Leave comments there or on Facebook. You can follow us on Twitter and retweet the clever things we say very rarely. And send us your five answers. Otherwise, next week, you guys. We'll see you then.
Bye. Bye.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We don't recognize more of the authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Until next time, you can find us blogging and listen to past podcasts at geekswithoutgod.com. And you can follow us on Twitter at geekswithoutgod.
We're geeks.
We're geeks.
We're geeks without God.
We're geeks.
We're geeks.
We're geeks without God.
We're geeks. Geeks without God.
Shit, I just got to do this.
Yep.
Because it had to get done.